This is the PoetryFoundation.org podcast, May 16th, 2007. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, How to Be a Poet 2.0. In 1855, over 150 years ago, an obscure freelance journalist self-published his first book of poems. He set some of the type, he distributed the book himself around New York City, and he even wrote his own glowing newspaper reviews. That do-it-yourself spirit is alive and well among today's poets, though the technologies have changed. Think about this. If Walt Whitman were around today, do you think he'd have a blog?
I think he'd absolutely have a blog. He may have several.
That's Shanna Compton, and she's a poet and a blogger, and she recently wrote an article that you can read on poetryfoundation.org about the profound effects that blogging has had on poets and the business of poetry. She joins me in my Brooklyn office because I wanted to make sure that we were in front of a computer in case you wanted to show me something or had an irresistible urge to blog. We can follow that as well. So blogging hasn't been around very long. It's been maybe at the most 10 years, and podcasting is even younger. I think podcasting is only 3 years old. But you say that the internet has fundamentally changed the way that poets do business. How so?
Well, I used to work for a division of Random House. It was something that I always wanted to do when I came to New York, was go work in publishing and work on these things. And I had worked in bookstores in college before. And one of my great disappointments after being there was to discover that publishing was a business. Their emphasis is not on the art.
They want to sell books.
And they have to. And so the way that the internet has changed that is that because there are these free blogging platforms like Blogger, and the internet access is so prevalent now, an individual poet or a small press doesn't need to turn such a great profit in order to justify the expense, you know, related to publishing a book of poetry. Everything can be smaller scale, and the focus has shifted.
So how does blogging subvert the traditional career path for a poet, which has been basically you publish a book, you get to know a lot of more famous poets than you. You get them to blurb you on the back of your book, and maybe you get an academic appointment, and maybe you advance your career from that and build a small audience. How has blogging and the internet changed that?
Well, a lot of the poets that I read on a daily basis are people who don't have books yet. And say I'm interested in the work of Reb Livingston. She doesn't have a first book out yet, but she will, you know, in the coming year. But I've been reading her already for 3 years. And every time she has something new, I know where to go and find it. I go to her website and find it.
Yeah, she's a poet who works out of Washington, D.C., correct?
Right.
Let's go. Let's go find a poem by Reb Livingston.
Okay.
So what's the name of that website?
This is Homeschooled by a Cackling Jackal. This is Reb Livingston's blog. So these are three poems that she recently had in Culture Vulture, which is another, you know, internet-based magazine. Should I read this one?
Yeah, read the first one if you would. It's called Retention.
Retention by Reb Livingston. The sleigh is full of suitcases. Suitcases full of memories. These memories weigh me down. The sleigh is a wooden toboggan that's never been waxed. I never saw a sleigh trip over a snowflake before, nor been quite so charmed by a song about child abuse. Lugging around this extra weight makes glaciers seem speedy. That one over there, I've named it Lucas's Ejaculation, an only recollection of a one-time sweetheart.
So I have no clue what that poem is really about, do you?
well, that one, she's talking about how the scene reminds her of a sweetheart. The sleigh is full of suitcases. Someone's traveling somewhere. And the suitcases are full of memories. And that's not a usual line. You're not expecting her to say that.
And she's punning with memories.
Definitely, there's a pun there. And then the next stanza, lugging around this extra weight makes glaciers seem speedy. That one over there, I've named it Lucas's Ejaculation, is another way she's bringing back in the bodily elements that she's talking about. So we've got this outdoor scene and also this very intimate sort of sexualized physical thoughts going on. And when she ends it up by saying an only recollection of a one-time sweetheart, it makes sense. She's got the seasons, which are keyed to all kinds of memories, and these physical, very bodily sort of sensations that are happening that she's thinking about. And it makes perfect sense that she's thinking about a sweetheart, because those might be two things that you would recall.
So that's Retention by Reb Livingston, and she's a poet that has never published a book, and he can only be found pretty much online, maybe in a couple of magazines.
She does have a couple of chapbooks. One is an electronic chapbook from coconutpoetry.org, and she does have a book coming out from Coconut Books later this year.
So for people, for general readers of poetry who don't want to slog around the internet looking for interesting poems to read, it seems to me that there's still a big role for gatekeepers in poetry. The traditional gatekeepers, of course, have been magazines like Poetry Magazine, right? So how are blogs and internet poetry and podcasts, how is that going to change that need for gatekeepers for the general reader?
Well, I mean, I'm one of the people who thinks that there could be many interesting things happening that don't necessarily get through the pre-established gates. If you look at a group like the Flarfless Collective.
Now, I've heard of Flarf, and I know that it's based on the idea you grab stuff from the internet and reassemble it in different ways.
Well, that's part of it. One of the things they're most interested in is addressing and exploring the taboos and boundaries of poetry, what's inappropriate. That's what they find really interesting. And so if they're going to specifically, purposefully use inappropriate, so-called inappropriate material, there may not be a lot of older, more established magazines who that stuff would appeal to, so they may not publish it. But one thing they can do is they have a blog called, you know, flarfmainstreampoetry.blogspot.com. All of them are bloggers, and all of them were sort of being inundated with spam and internet language and message boards and this kind of messy stuff, and they started looking at it as a kind of collective unconscious.
Can we go find a Flarf poem?
Sure. I've got some from Katie Degentesh. She just has a book out called The Anger Scale, which was published by Combo Arts. What she did was, there's this Minnesota multiphasic personality test, and the anger scale is one of the evaluative indexes of this test.
You said the anger scale?
The anger scale, which is where she gets the title of the book. What happens in the book is she took each of the questions or phrases from the test and used it as a search phrase in Google or whatever search engine she was using. And those became the titles of the poems. And then the results pages, as they came up, she would go through several pages of those and just sort of pluck phrases and then later weave those together into a poem. So this is one of those.
And it's called, Life is a Strain for Me Much of the Time.
And the patient would answer true, false, or to what degree that's true. Life is a strain for me much of the time. This planet has, or rather had, a problem. It simply feels flat most of the time, the way a very few rich people do now. They leave off the breathing Americans in solitary confinement in the Arctic winter when the sky had a lot of energy and the mosquitoes were not in full force. Think pill bugs of the sea involved in bloody feudal wars. Some were shoddier than others. Some were taught to play on the violin. Some were nobles who had upset the king. Some were actively connected to the actual events. An old lantern lit the men's faces. The mud was at least ankle deep. It was the constant darkness more than the cold, the standard average student mold. Just as your heart goes out to the man when you learn that he was abusive and miserable, sometimes it seems odd that topless bathing isn't allowed. When we give away use of roads, we get too much cheese. 5 of the 6 dioramas show you can trust the federal government to be cheaper than coal. Even the smart kids burn the good food in front of us. In favor of the articulation of existing paradigms, it is cleaner when burned. The naive reader may believe that you feel uncomfortable because of the appearance of your eye and eyelid, but the real problem is that alcohol was the primary agent for the development of Western civilization around a large quantity of dog poop.
That sounds a bit like a John Ashbery poem, except it's more listy and less fluid than a John Ashbery poem.
Well, and I think part of the texture of a Flarf poem is the rawness of it. And that's again, part of the inappropriateness. The poem has this polished, fluid, sort of metrical creation is what they're working against.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here. It reminds me a little bit of the early days of Surrealism. And I particularly don't like French Surrealism, but I like the effect that Surrealism ultimately had on language, especially among the Spanish and especially in this country later. So maybe these poems, which I don't necessarily connect with, they could be changing the language in some way by their disjunctiveness, by their jumping all over the place. They could ultimately have a profound effect on the way poetry is written and read.
Yeah, sure. I mean, what poets who work on the internet and work with internet-related materials and technologies are doing is engaging with the entire culture. They're not saying that what's out there on the internet is not an appropriate subject for poems. And this is more and more the way people coming up, especially in the United States, of course, today, are living. I mean, kids at a very young age are getting online, and they're learning to use the internet as a reference and a resource, and they're there every day. So if the poets aren't there, they might miss us.
So this is all great for being a poet and making one's way into this world. What are blogs and the internet? What is it going to do for general readers? How is it going to change the way most general readers experience poetry or have access to poetry?
Well, it's very easy now to start with one poet, and by looking up a single poet whose poem you like there, you could find her blog. And you, from there, you could find the magazines that she's been published in. And all of those things being interlinked and being free and being right there on your desktop, it's sort of a breadcrumb trail that you can follow easily to find the stuff that you wouldn't know where to find because the mainstream media hasn't been covering it anyway.
Shanna Compton is a poet and blogger. Check out her article about poetry blogs called Just Get the Poems Out There at poetryfoundation.org, where you can also read Harriet. That's poetryfoundation.org's own blog featuring Kwame Dawes, Kenneth Goldsmith, Jeffrey McDaniel, Patricia Smith, and Rachel Zucker. Shanna Compton's blog and many of her own poems can be found at shannacompton.com. Do let us know what you think of this program, where our motto is...
You should never explain a poem, but it always helps nevertheless.
Our email is podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For the poetryfoundation.org podcast, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.